7:30 a.m.
Tad, get out of the bathroom, dear. Your father's got to shave. You can finish your washing later.
Yes, ma'am.
7:45.
Tad, you and Emily will have to wait for your breakfast. I've got to get your father off or you'll miss his train.
Yes, ma'am.
Hurry, Steve.
8 a.m.
Dad, couldn't you please somehow come to school today?
Daddy, Tad feels awful bad.
Goodbye, everybody.
About...
Gotta go.
Bye, Daddy.
Who is this man running from his house, his family, running to his job? To his job. He's running away from the biggest job a man ever had.
Living 1949, brought to you each week by NBC and its affiliated stations, anticipating a Father's Day soon to come, holds up its radio mirror to look at fathers and to reflect a growing danger to America's families and futures in a drama document entitled
No Family Should Be Without One.
Your narrator, Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. That was Steve Dale you heard a moment ago, rushing for his train. Steve is just one of hundreds of thousands of American fathers who do this every weekday morning. And every night come home seeking rest and wanting...
Just to be let alone, please.
Children, be quiet. Your father's very tired from the office.
I don't like the office. I don't think it's good for Daddy.
Silly men have to go to offices.
Why?
To earn money. That's what fathers do.
Oh.
Shh, children.
That's Steve Dale any evening. But to get back to morning, this particular morning, Steve's upset and deeply disturbed. So disturbed, his steps are slowed and he may miss his train, the 8:10 to the city. 10 minutes before, at the stop above this one, East Pines, Steve's daily commuting companion, tall, slangy, red-headed Tim Hawkins, got on the train. And at this stop, portly, self-impressive Walter Packard Sr. was waiting when it pulled in. It's 8:09 and a half now. The local's about ready to pull out. But, Steve, oh, here he comes.
Oh, made it. Oh, brother, I'm pooped. Hi, Walter. See, you arrived conservatively and with breath to spare.
Yeah. I wagered half a buck on you, Stephen. Glad you made it.
You mean Tim bet against me? Oh, you rat.
I figured not enough incentive for you to run like that just to get to your job.
I'm afraid I'm running away from my job this morning, Tim.
Huh?
This is certainly the 8:10 local, which takes us direct from home to city.
Yes, Walter. Takes us from home. That's just it. I'm running out on the job of being a father.
Ah, what do you mean running out? Are you leaving Mary or something?
I seem to have left her already, as far as our thinking alike goes, but... No, I don't mean actual physical desertion.
Well, you're certainly doing your part as a provider, Stephen. I don't know a harder worker or a more ambitious one.
You don't know, of course, what happened at night. Between my family and me, my wife Mary, my son Ted, 12, little Emily, 7. They can't know the worry and the fright so deep inside me, and yet they sure, their fathers too.
Hey, tell me something. You fellas have families. Ever disappoint your kids?
Never. Make it a point. Allowance on the dot every Saturday. Make it a point just before I go off to the club for my golf.
What do kids do with their allowance, Waller?
I don't know. It's his money.
Oh, no, I don't mean exactly allowances when I say disappoint. I meant, did you ever not do something with them when they wanted you to?
His mother takes him wherever he wants to go. Naturally, I haven't time.
Walter, I disappointed my boy today badly. Look... Can I tell you about it?
Sure, certainly.
Maybe if I get it straightened out a little in my own head. Well, last night, Tad came to me and he said... I can hear him now. He's so grown up, so offhand.
Don't forget tomorrow, Dad.
Huh? Tomorrow?
The field meet at school. You're going to be one of the judges.
Oh, no. Tomorrow's a business day, Tad. I can't go to school with you.
Well, you said you would. I told him.
You said you would, Daddy, and he told him.
You don't need to be an echo, Emily.
I just
said. Ted, when did I say...
Right here in this room, Steve, from behind your newspaper at breakfast 2 weeks ago. You said sure.
You sure did, Daddy.
Sure you did, Daddy.
Undoubtedly, you didn't know what Tad had asked you, dear, or what you were promising, but since he's told him...
Look, I can't go tomorrow, Mary. We're having a staff meeting. I'm sorry, Tad. Some other time?
But there won't be some other time, Dad. This is the field meet.
Well, your mother can go and take Emily, too.
Can I? Must be nice to be a father. Kiss him good morning, kiss him good night. Everything in between is up to Mama. I'd like to be a father. No worries.
But, Dad, that's not the same. Mother going, I mean. Father's...
Dad, I said I can't go. Now, that closes the subject.
Gee whiz, Dad.
How do you expect your father to be a good provider and still play around?
Oh, you are a good provider, Steve, of course. Of money and things, but...
But what, for heaven's sake?
But are you a good father?
Mary.
Oh, Dad, you better go call Mrs. Devons right now. She's expecting your father to be a judge tomorrow.
I guess... Gee, would I hate to go tomorrow now after... Do I have to, Mom?
Of course you'll go, Ted. It's your job to go.
Yes, sir. Come on, Emily.
I think you're mean, Daddy. Gee whiz, Ted.
Oh. You seem to think I'm mean, too, Mary.
I think you're a little mixed up, Ted.
Mixed up? About what?
About which comes first, your family or your career.
Me? Your career? Say, look, honey, I'm just an ordinary businessman trying to get along. Stop trying to be funny.
Oh, it's far from funny, Steve. When somebody says occupation to you, what do you think of? A certain sales department and quarterly reports and union car and foundry and all its sacred works. Well, Steve, you're a father, too, you know. How do you classify that job? Hobby? Avocation? Spare time fun? What if somebody asked you that? How would you answer?
Well, fellas, I'll admit that made me a little mad, but it also set me to wondering, what are fathers worth? This morning, I couldn't think of anything more to say to Tad, so I just ducked out and ran. Emily came to the door and called after me.
Daddy, I know why they call Daddy Father.
Why, Emily?
Because you're always going farther and farther away. Father and father and
brother,
father.
Brother, that didn't help.
Father,
that put the topper on it. Father and farther away. I heard it over and over as I walked. Slowed me up enough, that and the worry, so I nearly missed this train. This train that's taking me even farther away.
You think you're running out on being a father just because you aren't going to Tad's field day? Why, it's ridiculous, Steve. My son, Walter Jr., goes to that school. He'll be in the field meet. I'm not going, and I'm not worried.
Did he ask you?
Well, his mother's going.
Oh, well, look, it isn't just today, Walter and Tim, or the field meet. This thing is every day. The morning rush, before they're up sometimes. The evening collapse. Let Daddy alone. Run along, kids.
Relax, boy. Relax and forget it. Kids don't need a father nowadays, anyhow. They got schools and clubs and mothers. We fathers, we're a vanishing race.
Well, you're in a new species, anyhow.
Huh?
Oh. I beg your pardon, sir?
I beg yours. I'm a stranger to you gentlemen. I get on at Reed's Point.
Oh, I know the Dixons there.
My name's Trapnell.
I
couldn't help but hear some of your discussion. Absentee fathers, that's what you fellas are, isn't it?
Absentee fathers?
Yes. Oh, you are all fathers, I take it.
Yes, I have two young children, a boy and a girl. Walter has a boy.
Well, 13. Smart, though.
Yeah, I have two daughters in their teens, Lord help me.
Well, from your conversation, you rush away in the morning, shouldering them out of your way. Seek no particular meeting of the minds or conversation with them at night.
I'll say not.
And you go off to the golf club on the weekend. You've abdicated all fatherhood except financial responsibility.
Well, at least we bring home the bacon.
Almost too zealously sometime, Mr. Hawkins.
You know, it takes a lot of bacon nowadays.
Times have changed, Trapnell, my dear fellow. We can't be expected to carry on under modern pressures at high tension in our very competitive society and handle homework, too, as our fathers did.
Homework? I remember my father was not only our provider, he was our security in every way. Our guide, our fortress, and our disciplinarian when Mom urged discipline. He was our teacher. He was a teacher we considered superior to any in school. A father today can't spend the time.
No. Times have changed indeed. Changing families. Most fathers work away from home now, except in farm areas. Have to make more money to buy more things. Our society seems bent on pulling families apart instead of welding them together. But there are some things still, besides money, which a child can get only from his father.
You mean people's hearts and heart needs haven't changed? Yeah, I guess I've failed my son. My father never failed me, though. I remember one of my school day crises.
Oh, Stevie, don't bite your tongue clear through, and don't look so desperate, sonny. Nothing a school teacher could think up, be she pure devil, could be as bad as the way you're looking.
No, Pop. Well, listen to this problem. If you had the sum of $13,133.39 earning compound interest at the rate of 6% on the first $10,000 and 5% on the remainder for a period of 26 years, how much money would you have in your account at the end of that period?
Pure devil she be. Gee, horse of it, compound interest. Now, if your Uncle Ben, who worked in the bank, was still around, but me, I'm better at crops. Still,
You do think it's tough, huh, Pop?
Oh, yes, sir, boy, mighty steep, but we will surmount it. We'll get on the party line now and talk with Mr. Sims about it.
Mr. Sims? He's the biggest farmer in the country, Pop.
Yeah, you ought to know. Shh. Sims? Jim Dale. My son Stevie's got a dilly of a mathematics problem, and I thought maybe you could help us. We might bring Jacobs in, too. Yeah. Well, it starts out, if you had 13,100...
Oh, and I never forgot that. The big men of the neighborhood called in by my father to help me. I grew an inch overnight. I guess I sounded then to my father back in those days, just like my son sounds to me now. You know, he asked me the other night...
See? Here, Dad. This is a kind of rugged problem in fractions. Could you help me cope with it?
And did you sound to him as your father did to you when you answered?
No. No, I said, run along, Tad. I've been working hard today.
Well, you have. Trouble is, families don't understand about our job.
That's true, and it's a shame, Mr. Hawkins. You know, little girls can play house and wife and mother fine because they see their mother at work. But boys... they don't know what office is like. Take them in sometime. Show them around.
What? Impress our children with filing and dictation, sir?
It impresses you, doesn't it, Mr. Packard?
He has you there, Walter.
I knew all about my father's job. In and out of season every day, no matter what. My father took me into his confidence.
We'll plant the early corn at the south field this morning, Stevie. You get my planter ready and follow along. We'll put the Kentucky Wonders in this afternoon.
And the beans will climb right up on the corn stalks, Pop, huh?
That's right. Save our putting out a mess of poles.
He worked right there at home with us, farming. And he had a little leather working shop in the barn. Mended saddles, made bridles for the neighbors. You know something? I can make bridles. And he had lunch with us every day and... Oh, but we can't go back to that.
No, not all of it. But the sense of security, maybe. We look for today in our jobs, not our families. So it becomes a thing of dollars and cents instead of understanding and belonging and, oh, I don't know, integrity. Oh, but I see I've talked too much. I've sent Mr. Hawkins, Mr. Packard, deep into a game of gin rummy to escape me.
No, we fall in naturally every morning anyway, Mr. Chapman. I've been listening to you one ear. But, you know, I don't really need to devote more to it. I, Steve and Walter, they have to work at being fathers. They've got sons, you see, and everybody knows too much mother love for boys means smother love. But me, I got girls. Near grown, too. So I can leave them to their mothers safely enough.
And where, Mr. Hawkins, do you think your daughters get their ideas of men, the kind they should marry, the ways men should act? From you, sir. Well, you're the first man they know. You are the first man they love. You are, in effect, their first beau. This is a male and female world, and home is where the child gets his first idea of the world. First ideas of sex, of maleness and femaleness, of how men and women act, of how they live together.
What kind of an example have I set my daughter?
They call daddy fathers because you go father and father away.
Father This fellow Trapnell's interesting. He is informed, but he's only making me feel worse. He's piling it up like a conscience.
You know, Steve, maybe he's got a point there. I hadn't figured that part of it, my having to set an example for girls. Complicated business, eh, fatherhood?
Oh, yes. There's been a good deal on the father problem in the papers and magazines lately, too.
Yeah. See, I read one piece. It was a shock. About boys from good families, too, going out robbing. And he even shot a guy just for no reason.
Oh, that case in the paper last night. Yeah, I read it.
I must have missed it.
Tell Walter, Trapnell, he's too smug about his junior.
Well, without embroidery. Four boys, well-fed, well-clothed, quite adequately provided for financially, set out to rob and kill, if necessary, to assert their importance. Three of the boys received little affection from their fathers. The fourth boy rarely saw his father. He was overwhelmed with mother love, smothered, as Mr. Hawkins said. They shot a man in cold blood, the first one they could find on an unlighted street to test their nerves and guns. And they giggled when they were caught. The leader...
Okay, you caught me. Everybody's entitled to two or three robberies. I liked it. All the other fellas were doing it.
He sounded old and tough. He was 12 years old.
My Tad is 12.
Well, my boy's 13, but that story doesn't worry me. It doesn't touch me. I know everything my son does.
And thinks? And plans and wants to do? How can you, Walter, when you spend so little time with him? How can I? Can any of us really know? Look, suppose instead of that poor, lost, swaggering juvenile delinquent...
Okay, you caught me. Everybody's entitled to two or three robberies. I liked it. All the other...
Suppose it was my Tad.
The other fellas were doing it. I fooled my old man, all right. He didn't know the score.
He could say it. It could be true for him.
Oh, don't be so emotional over these things, Steve.
They're things of emotions, Walter. Heaven
only... I set Walter Jr. a good example, and
when?
I can...
Yeah. Those girls in that city down south, 14 years old, ran away from home, went to Washington to pick up men. That shook me.
I read that. When the police traced them and told them their parents were frantic with worry for them, they said...
To heck with them. If you take us back to them, we'll just do it again.
What about my little girl? When she grows up, when she's 14, will that little voice that called out...
Daddy! Daddy, I know why!
Growing older, will that voice ever say...
To heck with them. We'll just do it again.
Oh, fatherhood can be a terrible thing.
I wish I were a father. Must be wonderful. No worries.
Still, I don't imagine the kids miss us very much. They certainly don't seem to think much of their fathers. Their favorite radio programs are the ones making fun of us. Showing us his bungling, bumbling, butterfingered old bubblehead.
Don't shoot, Father. Save him for laughs. Yeah. That's another widespread and dangerous idea abroad in the land.
Even if they respect us, Mr. Trapnell, children are quite self-sufficient today. They don't want us around much.
Well, mine wants me. He wanted me today. And he may not again.
Why don't you get off this train now, right now? Go back, Mr. Dale. You'd be in plenty of time for the meet.
Gee, you think? Oh, but there's that staff meeting. I can't. Tad always seems to pick such bad times.
Not during business hours, surely.
Well, the school play last year.
In the evening?
First night of our annual convention. And a Boy Scout father-son picnic.
Yeah, that was Saturday afternoon, Steve. I remember that.
The Saturday the president of my company invited me to golf with him.
No question which you chose.
Oh, Tad should understand.
Oh, of course. After all, he's 12.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'd give anything to go back now.
Oh, forget it, Steve. Forget it. Let us deal you in a hand.
They'd be just about starting the track meet when you got there, Mr. Dale. There'd be a boy at the gate to usher you in.
Kendall School track meet, sir. Here's a program in the seats across the field. It's nice to have a father come, sir. We've got 21 mothers so far and 13 baby brothers and sisters. And one lady brought a dog. Until you came, two fathers.
Then you'd locate your wife?
Mary.
Steve. Oh, Steve, you came after all. Oh, I'm so glad.
And little Emily?
Daddy came. Daddy came. Gosh, Mother, isn't Daddy nice? I'd like to marry him when I grow up.
You'd like to hear her say that, wouldn't you?
Oh, like it. You paint a fine track meet, Mr. Trapnell. Say, why don't you get Walter there, too?
Oh, I haven't much hope for Walter.
No.
Well, Tad, what about him?
You'd barge through a bunch of kids to Tad. He'd look up.
Dad! Oh, gee, gosh, Dad! Hey, fellas, this is my father!
You could tell from his face he was gonna win his event now you were there. And he'd take you over to his teacher, the one he called up last night to tell you weren't coming.
Miss Devons.
My father came, Miss Devons, even when he wasn't any longer going to be a judge. It was, like I said, Miss Devons, unavoidable, what was going to keep him away. Only somehow he managed to avoid it.
I'm glad. It's hard to get fathers.
Honey, I haven't avoided it. But, gee, I can't. There's that staff meeting. Don't you see? I can't afford. Besides, I haven't gotten off the train. Oh, I can't. I wish you'd let up on me, Trapnell.
Can you afford not to, Dale? And you too, Packard and Hawkins. I don't mean just the track meet. I mean being fathers. You worry about being late to work. This is your work. Don't be too late for it. You know, I doubt that any of you is irreplaceable at the office. All of you are at home. Perhaps you'll have to be willing to be a little less of a success in your business career in order not to be a failure as a father.
Any other day but today, Trapnell. Any other day.
You're sure? Other meetings, conferences, conventions will get in the way.
Tomorrow.
All right, if you honestly mean that, you have a chance. So does your family, if tomorrow comes. What about you, Packard? Hawkins?
Who are you, sir, to try to pin us down like this?
Yeah, what's the angle? Reform or...
That's right. You haven't included yourself with us. Are you a father?
No. No, not now. At least no children at home. I'm one who was too late for my work. Tomorrow didn't come in time for me. I'm a man of affairs, important, and affairs and importance matter. I have a married daughter with a badly broken heart because I gave her no standards for men. I had a son, 16, who shot himself because he wasn't brilliant, felt unloved.
Gosh, Trapnell.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure.
You have time. You have evenings. Don't refuse all of them to your children just to be let alone. You won't always want to be let alone. You have weekends. Don't spend everyone just in adult fun. You have dinner time for conversation. You have bedtime for stories and confidences. You have less time than your own father had. So make better use of what time you have.
Now, from here on out, Trapnell, believe me, being a father is my business.
The business of being a father has changed greatly in the past 60 years because the very makeup of society has changed. Pressures now tend to drive families apart rather than help them stay together. Many of the jobs of the father have been taken over by mother, school, state. Yet the biggest job of all, the fathering part of fatherhood, the example and participation of a father in the life of his sons and daughters, can be handled by no one else. It is important for America's future to call home our absentee fathers. Today's children are tomorrow's America. What we need is not one Father's Day for fathers, but fathers for every day. For truly,
no family should be without one.
Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Dorothea Lewis wrote this script. Ben Grauer is your narrator. Steve Dale was played by Richard Coogan. The music is composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. This program is directed by Jack Cuney. To the Father's Day Committee, our thanks for assistance in research. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1949 by listening next week to our drama document entitled The Book of Books. Remember the new time for the NBC Symphony tonight. Be sure to hear the first in the delightful new series of summer concerts. Tonight's conductor is Fritz Reiner, and the guest soloist is Dorothy Maynor, who will sing many of the selections for which she is noted. You won't want to miss this opening broadcast of the new NBC Symphony Summer Concerts tonight on most of these NBC stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.